It is good to be here again tonight and to see this number assembled as we've come to worship, to encourage, and to study together. I hope my lesson will be of some help to all of us, especially those who may be parents and maybe even grandparents and great-grandparents. And if we've got any great-great-grandparents here, then maybe you'll get some out of this too to help the younger generations. Talking about smart parents tonight and some keys to helping our kids say no. In a previous lesson, I mentioned this fact about the fact that we need to listen to our children. We need to take them to heart. And remember that rules without relationships lead to rebellion. Rules without relationships leads rebellion. And in our lesson tonight, I want to suggest that there are five steps to take. And the younger we begin with these children, the better the results will be. Because if you don't have a relationship with your children by the time they're in their teens, it's an uphill struggle. Yes, you can make some improvements along the way, but the going is going to be tough. And too often, parents don't wake up to the problem until there really is a problem. And sometimes it's too late then. But always keep in mind, rules without relationships lead to rebellion. So let's consider the first steps that help our kids to say no. And that is acceptance. 1 Samuel 16:7. The Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." So we deal with what I call the performance basis. One unscientific survey suggested that 85% of children are on a performance basis at home. What do I mean by that? The better my grades, the more mom and dad love me. The better I do my chores, the more they love me. And whenever a kid is on this level, even if he only thinks it's true, the child will not really have a sense of security, that they're going to be loved for who they are, not just for what they do. And this comes in many different guises. Father's at a ball game and son's up to bat and he strikes out. What does he think Dad thinks of that? He looks up in the stands. Dad kind of make a face. Fathers, when's the most likely time that you'll say to your son or daughter, "Hey, let's go out to the Dairy Queen for a treat"? That's when they win the game. And nothing wrong with that, but is that the best strategy? How about doing that when they lose the ball game? One father went out and bought some gift certificates to go to for an ice cream treat and gave the coach of the team a ticket for every kid. "Oh, thanks. I'll take the kids out after our first win." Father said, "No, I want you to take it after their first loss." "Why is that?" "Because I want them to know that we love them whether they win or lose. And we're not so much proud of when they win, we're proud of who they are, the kind of person that they are." He said, "My children, I don't want to acknowledge their success as much as their effort. And I don't want to acknowledge their effort as much as their being. They were created in the image of God and have infinite value and dignity." And the coach said, "That's novel." Yeah, kind of a strange words from a father, I guess. And the fourth game they lost. And the coach took them out and told them who had paid for the treats. And later, some of the kids saw the father, and they stopped to thank him. And one boy said, "Wow, it doesn't matter to you whether we win or lose. You love us anyway." Only 11 years old, but he got the message. And take the problem with report cards. One father had a son who got all A's, and the daughter got all C's. What are we going to do about that? How'd you handle that? Well, do they have difference in abilities? Do you show a difference in love and acceptance for the son? Pat him on the back and scold the daughter for being lazy and not studying? How do you handle that? One father told his straight A son, "Son, I want you to know that if you never got an A in your whole life, I would still love you just the same." And the son said, "Yeah, I know that, Dad. But aren't you glad I got all A's?" Well, yeah, he was. The point is, we love our children because of who they are, not because of how smart they are or how athletic or how beautiful they are. We love them because of who they are. And here's a potential for danger in this. We can do great harm to our children when we condemn others who have done wrong. That is the attitude that we have. Not to condone sin, but what attitude do we display towards the wrongdoer? Maybe our neighbor's daughter is pregnant, or maybe their son got caught in a drug bust. Do we express a willingness to forgive and to help them, or a spirit of vengeance that says to our children, "You better not mess up. Don't come to me for help if you do"? What's our attitude? Through the years, we have had dozens of young people living with us. Pregnant girls, runaway boys, boys not wanted. We've tried to convey the right message to our own children through these troubled kids that lived with us. And we believe that through love and compassion, we can help them to overcome. And our own children learn a lesson. Somebody asked us one time, "Aren't you afraid? You have all these pregnant girls live with you. You know, their parents call us, you know, can you help us out? And aren't you afraid that's going to have bad influence on your children?" I says, "No, if anything, they've learned that's not the way to go." And our children have likewise, some of them, taken others in as well. We must get this message through to our children when we condemn others. That as a father or mother, we don't love our daughter because she's because she's not pregnant. We don't love our son because he's not in a gang or alcoholic. We love them because they're our children. They're made in the image of God, and they are worth dignity and acceptance. We love them no matter what. We may discipline them, may get on their case, but we still love them. Romans 5:8, "But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." So if our children get in trouble or flunk out of school, we need to work with them to help them to overcome. And when they know this, they have incredible security, and we open their hearts. Of course, they still may go astray, but that's in spite of all we do to help. Yes, my children can do wrong, and they must suffer the consequences, but I am not responsible for my children. I'm responsible to my children. I'm responsible to love their mother, to be a model of a man loving his wife, to love and provide for my children, to discipline them and teach them right and wrong, to teach them how to deal with pressure. That's my responsibility to my children, but we must help them to see that they are responsible for themselves, and we cannot assume their responsibility, and if we don't teach them this, then we fail as a parent. Parents who always step in and shield their children from bad consequences from their bad behavior are doing them no favor. They're doing them harm. Back in a community near us a while back, some boys stole an SUV with a trailer. They went through the neighborhood knocking down mailboxes, and then they dumped the car in a lake. The coach of his team in school put him off the team. And the parent sued the school for kicking the son off the team. I don't think the father did the son any good. Not any good. But we must give our kids an unconditional acceptance to give them a sense of security. Back to the baseball illustration. Ever watch TV with your kids? And you're watching a ball game, and here you are, your team is up to bat, they're two runs behind, the bases are loaded in the ninth inning, and there's two outs, and the batter strikes out.
Ah, what an idiot. Send him back to the minors. He couldn't even hit that with a basketball with a bat.
And what does that convey to the son, the children? They better not mess up. And if he strikes out of the stands playing a game, then he doesn't want to look up at his dad sitting up in the stands. Then there's the matter of expressing appreciation. Paul expressed this, Philippians, the first chapter. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you. Philippians 4:10. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you've received your concern, revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. He's sending praise and thanksgiving to them. And when we express appreciation, it gives our child significance. And of course, these lessons, you know, are good for grandparents as well as for parents when we spend time with our little ones. When someone expresses appreciation to you for something you've done, how you do it, how do you feel? You feel good. That's nothing in comparison to how a child feels. They'll go an extra mile for it. No, they'll go an extra 10 miles for you when you really show them appreciation for who they are and what they've done that's good. But too often we're more concerned about correction than appreciation. We're more aware of wrongs than rights because we expect right things. Is there anything wrong with expressing appreciation for helping household chores, vacuuming the rugs, washing dishes, making up the bed, taking out the trash? When you eat in a restaurant and the waitress comes and refills your coffee cup or your glass of tea, what do you normally do? I guess you normally say thank you. Well, isn't that her job? Isn't that what she's supposed to do? Yeah. Well, that's what our kids are supposed to do, make her the bed when they get up in the morning. But do we owe them any less appreciation and acknowledgement than we do some stranger in a restaurant somewhere? Catch your children doing something right and show appreciation, even as we show the waitress appreciation for when she does a simple thing to fill our glass or our cup. Getting attention. Most children say the fastest way to get attention from their parents is to do something wrong. We get so busy working, cooking, cleaning, mowing the lawn, we don't have time to notice all the little things that they do, good behavior. But when the bad behavior comes, we'll set aside what we're doing and say, okay, we've got to deal with this. Let's say I'm working on a sermon in my office one day, and the wife comes in, and she says, you know, Susan's got on the school today, she's got a straight A report card. That's great. I'll say something to her when we eat at the table supper tonight. But then she comes in and says, Jeff just knocked a baseball through the neighbor's window. Ah, I told him to be careful about that. Where is he? Send him right here. I want to talk to him right now. We've got to deal with that. Some studies have shown that nearly 90% of bad behavior on the school grounds is within 10 feet of a supervisor. Why do you suppose that is? Maybe they just want some attention. And if the only way they know to get it is to do something bad, okay. Some psychologists have said it takes 20 positive comments to offset every negative comment a child gets. So every time a parent yells at the child, it's going to take a while to overcome that. But when we express appreciation, the child gains a sense of significance rather than a sense of no worth. No worth. A third matter is a matter of affection. Titus 2 and verse 4. Older women are to encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. When we show affection to our kids, they obviously gain a sense of lovability. Do you know how many young people become sexually involved simply to prove that they are lovable? The percentage is fairly high. We see this in Jamaica particularly, where over 80% of the children are born outside of marriage. Over 80% born outside of marriage. Means the children growing up without a father to show love to them. And the mother's busy trying to provide for the kids. She didn't have any time for the kids. And so that's what happens. We need to express verbally and physically the love and affection they need. Our kids are not dumb. You can con a con, or you can fool a fool, but you can't kid a kid. They can see through things. They have an understanding. And if parents do not prove to the children that they are lovable, I guarantee you they'll provide that way by some other means. They'll prove that they're lovable in some way. They're smart enough to figure that out, even if it's in the wrong way. We need to express verbally and physically the love and affection they need. And even boys need hugs. I tried to show attention to our children's friends. I wanted them to have someone they could go to if they needed some help, because some of them didn't get much at home. From affection, our children gain a sense of lovability. Then there is availability. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up or nurture them in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. You ever wonder why this is addressed to fathers and not mothers, or not mothers and fathers? Too many men leave this up to mom. She's the one that has the tender heart. She has more time with him. She does more things with him. And he's out busy doing other stuff, you know, got more important things to do. But God understands that fathers are important. They're important. The idea of nurture is from the Greek ektrepho, to rear up to maturity. That is to cherish or train, bring up, nourish. A great part of that involves time, being connected, spending time with your children, being available. Because kids tend to spell love with the word T-I-M-E. Something I remember well about our former president, John F. Kennedy, and that is that he always seemed to have time for his children. We'd see him here and there with the kids. And that was shown in newspaper photos and TV coverage, spending time with little Carolyn or with John Jr., and even the family dogs. I appreciate that about him. There was always something was available to his children. He might go have an important meeting somewhere, and Caroline walks in the office, and he'll stop a moment and put her up in his lap and ask her what she wants. That was a good example. One wife, I read about, felt her husband was neglecting the children, and she told him, "Honey, if we spend time with them now, then they'll spend time with us when we're old." Okay, that makes sense. If you're old enough to remember a song called "The Cats in the Cradle," "Cats in the Cradle," three of you do. Okay. Here's the words of the song by Harry and Sandy Chapin. "My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way. But there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away. And he was talking before I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, 'I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you.' And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. 'When are you coming home, Dad?' 'I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.' My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, 'Thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw?' I said, 'Not today. I've got a lot to do,' he said. 'That's okay.' And he walked away, but a smile never dimmed. And he said, 'I'm going to be like him. Yeah, you know I'm going to be like him.' And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. 'When you coming home, Dad?' 'I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then.' Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, 'Son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while?' He shook his head and said with a smile, 'What I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later. Can I have them, please?' The cats in the cradle, the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. 'When you coming home, son?' 'I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know, we'll have a good time then.' I've long since retired. My son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, 'I'd like to see you, if you don't mind.' He said, 'I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you.' As I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. 'When you coming home, son?' 'I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're going to have a good time then.'" We leave so much to the rearing of children to our wives, to their mothers. The dads are just as important in many good ways. So when we're available to our children, they feel they're important. They feel they're important. We need to be looking for ways to be available to our children. Need to be on the lookout for ways. Who are our children's heroes today? I don't know. Miley Cyrus? Justin Bieber? One boy had to write a paper in his little class as to who his hero was. And he wrote about his dad as his hero. He couldn't spell Schwarzenegger, so he could spell Dad. So he did write about his dad. When my children were little, I sought to spend time with them. I'd go sometimes and have lunch with them at school. They appreciated that. Now, when they were in high school, that wasn't as cool. But when they were in grade school, they liked me to have lunch with them. And I did this with other kids sometimes, those who didn't have a dad. I coached Little League softball, the 7 to 10-year-olds. One year in coaching this team, we lost our first 9 games. No yelling, no anger, no sour attitudes. Then we won our 10th game against the top team in the league. And the coach of the other time had a hissy fit, came out yelling in the middle of the field and threw his cap down and stomped on it and just yelled at the umpire for a lousy game. He went on and on and on. And I called our little girls together. I said, "Girls, I'm proud of the way you have acted during the season. And now you see an example of how not to act when we lose." Some of the little girls needed desperate attention. Some of them, they'd come sit in my lap. And years later, in high school, I might see them around town, and they would talk to me and express appreciation for maybe the lessons that I taught them. Ecclesiastes says there's a time to laugh and a time to cry, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And we need then to find time to laugh with our children. And Deuteronomy 6, "These words which I command you this day shall be upon your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up." We talked about this the other lesson, how we expect the church on Sunday morning, Sunday and Wednesday night to teach our children. And they went to the synagogue every Sabbath. But he said, "No, I want this to be a daily thing. That you're spending time with your children trying to educate them." I would try to arrange my meeting schedule if I had a meeting some distance off. Try to arrange that in the summertime, so we would take our kids with us. We made some long trips from Georgia to California. Pretty long trip. We took our kids with us up into Montana, Idaho. When my son Jeff was 17, and I had three meetings up in the Northwest, he's having a fit to go with me. I said, "Jeff, you're in school." He's a senior. He went to each of his teachers. They said, "Go with your dad. You'll probably learn more there than you will in class." He'd already had all the credits he needed to graduate. So he and I had a five-week trip, drove 8,000 miles together, father and son. Great experience. Great experience. On our kid's 16th birthday, we would take them out to a restaurant. Downtown Atlanta, there's a restaurant on the top of a hotel that's 72 stories high, and it revolves. It's a pretty neat experience. If it's even a school day when they had their birthday, that's okay. We take them out of school. Wanted to spend time with them to show them how much they meant to us. And these are some of the great memories I had. We didn't always have a lot of spare time, but we had to be creative, and it was a great investment. Suppose you work for a company, and you run into a problem. You go in to see your boss. He's busy. He can't see you until next week. And how does that make you feel? Must not be too important. But when you go in to see your boss, and he says, "Well, I'm busy, but let me see what you need. Let's see whether we can work this out." It helps your self-esteem. Makes you feel like you're appreciated for the work that you're doing. And so with your children and your availability to them, from our availability, our children get a chance to feel that they're important, that they matter to us. Our culture encourages absentee parents, dad working longer and longer hours, mom working outside the home, and sometimes that cannot be avoided. But we should be careful that we do not replace ourselves with TV and things. There has got to be a correlation between the way our culture is raising children and the violence that permeates our nation and our society. When there is not a strong parent-bond relationship. And then there is what we call accountability. "Now, your father's still on the road. I'll be late for work. Don't forget to take out the garbage." Roger that. Well, he's taking out the garbage with his rifle there. Who's he accountable to? at Hebrews 12th chapter. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline, for the moment, seems not to be joyful but sorrowful, yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. That is true in the spiritual realm, but it's very true in the material realm, in the parent-child relationship. Juvenile delinquency was less of a problem when we were a rural society. Kids had chores to help with the harvest, to clean out the barn, feed the cows. They had work to do. They wanted to be productive. Everyone wants to feel useful and productive. And not many live on the farms today, but we still can teach responsibility. We can teach household chores, not leave it all up to mom or dad to do the vacuuming or the water the dishes or do the laundry. The kids can learn that as well. My wife and I have been amazed at some of the young people who came to live with us who did not know how to use a vacuum cleaner or the washing machine. I had no clue. I know when kids are small, it's easier for us to do the work rather than have them mess it up. But they need to learn. Accountability gives a sense of responsibility. And accountability also involves some guidelines, some rules. Teens need responsible limits, and deep down they want them. Many are frightened to be turned loose with no limits set. Dr. George Brothers, some of you older people remember Dr. George Brothers. Attention parents, children of strict parents are generally happier, better adjusted, and higher achievers than children of permissive parents. They feel secure in love, believing their parents care about what they do and what they become. Children of permissive parents interpret their parents' attitude not as greater love, but as a lack of concern. An experiment done some time ago on a school playground, younger children, and they took the fence down that was around the playground. And the children all stayed close to the church building. They needed some boundaries. They needed to feel safer. And so that experiment proved a valuable lesson that children do need boundaries. They do need boundaries. They want protection. And the rules must be consistently applied. We can see a lack of accountability with a fellow named Eli. We talked about this the other day. In that day, I'll perform against Eli all that I've spoken concerning his house from the beginning even to the end. For I've told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons did bring a curse upon themselves, and he restrained them not. Boys will be boys. Oh, they'll outgrow it someday. And he restrained them not. Rules must be consistently applied and rooted in our deepest values and beliefs. And accountability may also involve parents being accountable to the kids. Children have a right to expect certain things from their parents, from the things, some of the things we've talked about. I even one time went so far as to ask my children what changes they'd like to see in me as a father. Now, that can be dangerous, but I asked them. That might be risky at times, but you might find it helpful. And it will give them the sense that you care for them. Maybe some things that they need that you don't realize, but they realize it, they know it. So, accountability, accept appreciation, affection, availability, accountability. All A's on your report card. And you'll note that we haven't even talked about such things as sex, have we? These things will help your child say no to sex and whatever else comes down the road, whether drugs or violence, and will teach them what safe sex is all about. It's about a wedding ring. That's what it's all about. You can make a lot of mistakes in talking to your kids about sex, but if you have a relationship with your kids, that'll cover a multitude of mistakes. We also have guilt feelings. Sometimes parents burden themselves with guilt because they feel like they've failed. Remember that sometimes kids go bad even with the best of raising, and likely vice versa. Ultimately, our children have to make their own decisions, have to make their own way in life, good and bad. One of the godliest men that I've ever known was my Bible teacher in high school, in college, and a friend of my father's, and I think I mentioned Hamer the other day. Very godly man. Had five children, and at one time I think all five were gone. I think some came back to the Lord later on. When he was with us in a gospel meeting, I asked him, "Brother Haley, how do you deal with your children where they are?" My wife and I did the best we knew, and that's all we could do. I look at Adam and Eve and how they turned out and who their father was, and then I think who their father was. And I thought, what a wise statement. And I've used that so many times through the years to help people who were good parents, but the children turned out bad. And if you truly did fail as a parent, know that you can receive forgiveness for that, and you can use your experiences to help other parents to raise a better family. And we are thankful that the one who is up there will truly forgive us for any failure. He loves us so much that he gave his only son to die a horrible death in our place, that he might make eternal forgiveness available to us. If there's anyone present tonight who's not in a right relationship with God, he wants you. He wants you so badly that he died for you. And he invites you. We have even this time tonight to respond to the Lord's invitation, as Jesus has given us the way, and as the scripture says, why do you delay? Get up and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name. Would you come and we stand together and sing?